Hi, Michaela Lafrac here. The podcast you are about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. Around half of Vermont cigarette smokers use flavored tobacco, like menthols. And about 90% of Vermonters who use e-cigarettes, like vapes, use flavors. That's according to a survey that came out late last month from Vermont's Department of Health, using data from 2016 to 2022. This legislative session, state lawmakers proposed a ban on the sale of flavored tobacco and vaping products in Vermont. We're talking everything from menthols to flavored e-juices for vapes that come in flavors like caramel or apple watermelon. Proponents say this ban would help keep kids and young people from becoming addicted to tobacco. Last week, Governor Phil Scott vetoed the bill. Here's what he said.
I struggled with this bill as it seems hypocritical and out of step with other initiatives that have passed into law recently and over time. To be clear, I too feel we have an obligation to protect our children, but it must be balanced in such a way that we honor the rights and freedoms of adults to make decisions about their individual lives.
Now, there is still a chance for legislators to override the veto of Senate Bill 18. That's the hope of the bill's sponsor, Senator Ginny Lyons. She's a Democrat from Williston who's represented the Chittenden District for more than 20 years. She joins us now. Senator Lyons, welcome.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
We're glad you're here. Now, Senator Lyons, were you surprised by Governor Scott's veto?
Yes, actually, I was.
Why?
Well, I had thought that at the very least he would let it go into law without his signature, knowing that it is a controversial issue, no question about it. And I had heard from the Department of Health that they were very supportive of banning the flavors and encouraging kids not to get hooked in the first place. So I was just surprised that the governor didn't actually follow what I believe to be the recommendation from his own Department of Health.
Mm. And tell us more about why you decided to work on this bill this session. Why is this topic particularly meaningful to you?
Well, we've been working on this issue for a long time. I will say it's very distressing to see what the tobacco companies have done to hook kids on nicotine and then to promote the nicotine addiction throughout adulthood. Beyond that, we've seen huge medical expenses as a result of cigarette smoking and now increasingly with vape smoking. So the result is that we're spending so much more on Medicare, Medicaid, so much more on health care overall as a result of smoking-related costs in Vermont. And we can stop that. We know that flavors, many flavors, especially menthol, increase the ability for someone to become addicted. So when you smoke a flavor such as green apple or menthol, it actually increases the amount of nicotine that flows into the brain, but also it requires the smoker to want and need more of that nicotine. So my interest in this is very much from a healthcare, public health perspective, and I think it's critical that people understand that. It's not about a ban. We're not banning nicotine. We're not banning tobacco. We're not banning vaping. We are saying that we're trying to take away the flavors that will, A, increase addiction, but more importantly, attract young people to a lifelong addiction.
Well, we got an email from a listener who has a different view on flavors and their role in addiction to tobacco. Casey from Colchester wrote in to say that they support Governor Scott's veto. They're 78. They've lived in Vermont for more than 30 years. And among the reasons they moved here was, they write, to ensure that if I lived long enough, a total solar eclipse would occur in my backyard. And it did. I made it. But I would not have if I hadn't stopped smoking, the practice that took the lives of my mother, older sister, and brother. I quit smoking, they wrote, with the help of nicotine vaping. Flavors add a level of enjoyment to vaping that can help smokers quit cigarettes. They should be encouraged, not banned. Casey goes on to write that Governor Scott's veto was both wise and brave because it acknowledged the role that vaping can play in getting people off cigarettes for good. Now, Senator Lyons, I'm curious what you think of Casey's argument here, that the benefits of flavored products for some can outweigh the risks for others.
So we've heard that from many people, that menthol, obviously, and some of the other flavors actually soothe the throat so you don't feel the heat or the pain of inhalation. But it is, those are stories that individuals tell, and the research is what we need to back up how to use some of these products for quitting. The 802 Vermont programs are really terrific at helping people quit. So there are those who believe that the use of flavors or menthol might have helped them quit, but it's not something that's consistent across the whole population. It doesn't work for everyone, and people can spend a lifetime trying to quit.
And that's the 802quits.org program, the Vermont Smoking Treatment that you're referring to.
Yes, I am. And it's a very well-known program. If we knew how to use some of these products in a way that would allow people to quit over time and gradually, then perhaps they could be prescriptions, or they could be used by the Department of Health to move people away from addiction. We cannot understate the real crisis that we're facing with kids right now becoming addicted. So the flavor, and the flavors certainly add to that.
Forgive me as I look for an email from a teenager. Oh, here we go. Who wrote about something that you just mentioned. Juniper, a junior in high school, wrote in to say that they see kids using flavored vapes all the time. They buy them from convenience stores. And Juniper writes that they really want this bill to pass because they want to see their friends live long and meaningful lives. Well, we have a call coming in from Mike in Barrytown, who has a question or comment. Mike, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment from the perspective of a father of two 14 and 15-year-old boys. And I oppose this ban for a couple reasons. Number one, I don't think we need to be relying on the government to parent our children. And number two, you can get most of these same type of products and flavors in cannabis. So we have the same people who are fine with that telling us that we need to get rid of these nicotine products to protect our children. And, we're just kind of in general tired of the people down at Montpelier trying to tell us how to live, chasing business out of the state, revenue out of the state. This will just be a big boon for New Hampshire. That's all it's going to be.
Mm. Well, Mike, thanks so much for calling in. And Senator Ginny Lyons, what do you think of Mike's point there that a ban like this would hurt small businesses in Vermont, like general stores and corner stores that sell these flavored products?
Yeah, thank you. That's a great question. In fact, Massachusetts has gone through this process and did ban all these flavors. And now we're seeing results from Massachusetts that show that the number of convenience stores and retail tobacco licenses have increased since that law took place. When we support a veto that takes away our opportunity to reduce addiction, who are we supporting? We're supporting big tobacco corporations, and that's a crime. Massachusetts demonstrates that we're not undermining our local retail establishments. At the same time, we're allowing big tobacco to influence us in a way, and our kids in a way that is really extremely negative. One of the comments that one of the earlier people mentioned was that kids aren't going to live as long, and that's very true. We know right now that the younger generation, doesn't have the same life expectancy that the older generation has. And then finally, the comment about flavored alcohol and cannabis being regulated, why don't we just leave these flavors alone? Well, think about that. Alcohol is sold in very few places. It's sold in state-regulated stores. Cannabis is very highly regulated in this state. So perhaps that's what we need to do with flavored tobacco and vape products. Maybe we should set up a whole new expensive system of oversight so that they aren't as accessible in every single convenience store. So there's a lot built into that veto that really would change the way we currently do business.
Well, Mike from Marytown, our caller, brought up a concern about his sense that there was some government overstepping in regulating something like flavored tobacco. We also got an email from Richard in East Dorset, who wrote that, you know, back in 2019, Vermont raised the age of being able to buy these products from 18 to 21. And Richard says, you know, 21-year-olds and up should be able to make their own decisions to buy these legal products. I'm curious what you think of that, this concern that government might be overstepping here and infringing on people's right to buy what they want to buy.
No, I think government has an important role in public health protection. I think we look at our budget every year and the cost of health care in the state. Right now, we spend over $576 million in smoking-related costs. So there's the rock and the hard place. Do we allow for those escalating costs to go on, or do we put in place some measures that are going to do two things, protect people, and then to maintain a lower rate of healthcare increased costs?
Well, we, again, have received lots of emails on this subject. It's clearly one that hits home for a lot of folks on either side of this issue. Maria in Brattleboro wrote in to say that she hopes the legislature overrides the governor's veto. She writes that teens and adults' health is seriously harmed by tobacco products, which are highly addictive. I believe that a ban on the sale of these products will deter teens from using them, more so if the ban comes with education on the serious health products these products can cause. Senator Lyons, is that type of education taking place in our schools or other areas now?
Yes, it is. I will say, you know, you talk about kids. Right now, we're hearing about kids 9 years old, 10 years old, 12 years old who have accessed the e-cigarettes. And we also know that 37% of sales on tobacco is menthol related. So this is a really huge problem. So repeat the second part of your question, please, Michaela.
Oh, is education about the health concerns, especially around flavored products specifically, is that already taking place in our schools? Could it be bolstered in the future?
Yes, it is taking place. And of course, we've had the tobacco settlement funds coming into the state, and they have been used for kids against tobacco over a long period of time, and it has worked. And we demonstrate that where those monies have been invested in education, it does reduce some access. However, it doesn't solve the whole problem. So I agree with the person who called in, who said that we need both. So you need to have education, boots on the ground education, but then you also need to have some limited access to these products. And right now, with the inability to measure the amount of nicotine that kids are inhaling in a single vape, we're just opening ourselves up to more and more expenditures at the other end. So we can invest in prevention, but part of that prevention has to be to reduce access. We do a lot of work in the State House to prevent people from being exposed to toxic substances. And we've worked on that for many years. I mean, how many people want to have PFAS on their frying pans. How many people want to have BPA in their drinking cups? So bisphenol A. And how many people, we have banned those products, those chemicals in many of our products. And I don't see this as different. Because within the bill itself, cigarillos and cigars and other dips and chews would not lose menthol flavoring or other flavors. So it would restrict the use of menthol in cigarettes, and it would restrict flavors on in e-cigarettes where we still don't know how much nicotine is going to be sent into a child's throat.
Well, earlier in our conversation, I read part of an email we received from a high school junior named Juniper. I want to read the second half of that email now. Juniper wrote that they and a few other kids met with the governor before he vetoed this bill, urging him to pass it, to sign the bill, sign the ban. And they write that it feels like he, the governor, totally disregarded the significance of this issue. They feel discouraged and feels like all efforts that have been put into making this bill were for nothing. And they want to know what's next. Now, if we could just put aside, you know, who really sees the significance of this issue most clearly, and just talk about these feelings that Juniper is having about feeling discouraged about the democratic process. I mean, Senator Lyons, you know, it's part of your job, part of a lawmaker's job, to handle that discouragement when a bill you believe in doesn't become law. How do you handle it? What would you say to Juniper?
You know, Juniper, first I would say thank you for your comments, and it does take time for some of these really important and frequently controversial issues to make their way into law. Unfortunately, this is one I think that we've worked on long enough that people should understand it is critical for our future. But how do we handle this? Well, we go back to the drawing board and we look at what can we do, how many steps can we take forward before we take fewer steps backward.
Well, Senator Ginny Lyons, we're so appreciative of you joining us today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Michaela. And, you know, this is not the end of this issue. And unfortunately, we are not trying to be parents. We are understanding the public health consequences of a really, really difficult addiction. And we're trying to ensure that our children, as they grow older, will not become addicted to nicotine or other things like opioids. And we're trying to ensure that we are saving money overall. We do not want to support Big Tobacco and the marketing campaign that they've put on that's convinced so many people that this is not the right thing to do.
That's Senator Ginny Lyons, a Democrat from Williston, who sponsored Senate Bill 18. We're joined now from Montpelier by my colleague Bob Kinzel. He's a senior reporter who has been following this issue closely. Bob, welcome back.
Michaela, great to be here.
Great to have you. First, how was your eclipse?
Oh, it was wonderful. I was on the State House lawn, and I have to say, going into it, I had some expectations, but I'm not sure I was as excited as everybody else was, but I gotta say, it was just an amazing event to see it unfold and to be there with so many people to experience it together. So it was way beyond my expectations. I thought it was fabulous.
Oh, I'm glad. Well, unfortunately, the other news continued to happen. Well, maybe fortunately for some. Let's talk about this flavored tobacco ban. Now, the bill it passed, but it didn't pass the House or Senate with veto-proof majorities. Even though folks like Senator Ginny Lyons are now trying to override Governor Phil Scott's veto. Tell us where this bill stands and whether you think it can garner enough support to override a veto.
It's going to be a tough vote. I'm sure Senator Lyons is working feverishly behind the scenes because, you know, it takes a two-thirds vote in both the House and the Senate to override the veto. And when the bill originally passed in the Senate, it had 18 votes in favor and 11 opposed. Over in the House, it was a tougher situation. It had 83 votes in favor and 53 opposed. So supporters like Senator Lyons are going to have to flip several votes in each chamber. That's not going to be an easy task.
Whew. Well, let's take a call. Todd in Northfield has been waiting on the line. Todd, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I find something unsettling about this kind of legislation, which is just the disingenuousness. I don't know, maybe hypocrisy is the better word, but of a state legislating what flavors. It seems to me to be a smokescreen, no pun intended, literally no pun intended. It seems to me to be a smokescreen for the real issue, which is that tobacco products are deadly products that the state makes absurd amounts of tax money from. And if we're really that concerned about people's health, we'd be, instead of debating an issue that really, and keeping trying to force the issue through, I don't care. I mean, I don't care. I haven't smoked for 35 years, and I think it's a fool's errand, and I think tobacco taxes are keeping the government from really doing its job. When you have that much skin in the game, you're not really focused on, and this is.
I'm going to jump in here, Todd. I think I hear your point here, which is that the government is both earning a lot of money when people buy flavored tobacco products, and then they're also trying to step in and keep people healthy. It can be kind of contradictory. Bob, is that what you're hearing too?
That's exactly what I heard, and it touches in part on the governor's feeling that this is a hypocritical bill for a slightly different reason than our caller suggested. You know, the governor says, hey, the state already sells a wide variety of flavored alcohol products. Think about it. Fruit-flavored gin and vodka, hard lemonade, hard ciders. There's a huge selection of these products available in supermarkets and liquor stores all throughout Vermont. And the governor also says, what about the cannabis products that are being sold, fruit-flavored edibles, flowered products. So, you know, his argument is the state needs to be consistent. If we're going to treat tobacco this way, then we need to treat cannabis that way, and we need to treat alcohol that way. And that's when he has said he thinks it's very hypocritical. Now, the caller is saying maybe we should just ban tobacco sales altogether. That certainly has come up from time to time in the legislature. But then the feeling is, if Vermont bans cigarettes, would people just go to New Hampshire, go to New York, go to Massachusetts, order them online? So would that really solve the problem? But the caller raises a very interesting point.
Well, thanks so much, Todd, for calling in. Let's play a clip of Governor Phil Scott making just that point last week.
From my perspective, this bill is inconsistent with other laws relating to legalized substance use. In 2020, the legislature legalized the commercial sale of cannabis, including edibles and other flavored products, which are now widely available, despite the known risk to youth and their developing brains. Yet, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of an initiative to ban such products, even considering their obvious appeal to minors and negative health impacts.
Now, Bob, you're also on Vermont Public's Cannabis Beat. You know the intricacies of how cannabis is regulated in the state. Do you see inconsistencies?
Well, I think what the sponsors of the bill, like Senator Lyons, would say is that nicotine is different, that it's a more addictive product than either alcohol or cannabis. Now, that's not to say that there aren't huge problems with people being addicted to alcohol and or cannabis products. But she would argue that nicotine is much more addictive, and so it deserves to be in its own category. And, of course, nicotine is available much more widely than alcohol or the cannabis products, which are very tightly regulated by the state. So, it depends on how you come down on this thing. And if you feel that nicotine really is a highly addictive product, that especially for young people, because I think it's shown that most adult smokers started out smoking in their teens, that if you want to really have an impact there, you've got to do it when people are young.
Yeah, let's talk about that age issue. In 2019, Vermont passed a bill that raised the legal age to buy tobacco or e-cigarette products from 18 to 21. But of course, you know, as we've heard, there are lots of teens out there who are smoking cigarettes or vaping. Has that change in the legal age had any measurable impact that you're aware of, Bob?
I would have to think that it's had some impact. It was sort of when Vermont raised the drinking age back in the 1980s from 18 to 21. It had to have had some impact, particularly on people who were just below the age. So when we had a tobacco age of 18, maybe people who were 18 were providing tobacco to people who were 15, 16, and 17. This is a tough law to enforce. I mean, you can at the point of sale. You've got to show your ID, your photo ID when you buy a tobacco product. But we all know that there are people who buy these products for younger people and they have siblings or friends. And so that these products are available to younger people. They're also available online. That's another market that really needs to be looked at. And, you know, you can go to an online product selling place and it says, you know, click here if you're over 21. Oh, yeah, I'm over 21. Click. So, you know, the enforcement of this is difficult. I think part of the governor's argument also is that he would rather see the attorney general beef up enforcement of this. But from what I've seen at most of the convenience stores where tobacco is sold, they're pretty strict. You've got to have your government-issued photo ID in order to buy a tobacco product, very much in the same way alcohol. So it's just a tough law to enforce.
Yeah. Well, the Democrat-controlled legislature is no stranger to trying to override vetoes from Governor Phil Scott, a Republican. Is the legislature taking up any other bills that Governor Scott vetoed in the near future?
There are going to be a number of vetoes coming up, I would say, in the next 3 or 4 weeks. The House has passed a number of bills that include tax increases. We're going to wait and see what the Senate does with those bills, but there may be some that include tax increases to fund certain programs. The governor has already signaled that he is going to veto those without a doubt. And again, it'll be fascinating to see if the House and Senate can override his vetoes. Now, last year, the legislative leadership decided to consider a whole bunch of vetoes on one day. I think they did 5 or 6 in one day in May. They may decide to take that approach this year. When I asked Senator Lyons earlier about when this particular veto would be taken up, she said, well, let's wait and see. It could be sooner, it could be later. So something is going on. They've got a plan, but their plan has got to be linked to flipping votes because they're not going to bring this vote up unless they think they have the votes to override it.
Well, thanks for talking us through these issues, Bob. But before I let you go, I do want to acknowledge with you some news that we got out of the State House yesterday morning. Longtime Senator Dick Mazza, a conservative Democrat from Colchester, resigned. Can you tell us a little bit about the senator and the role he played there in Montpelier for decades?
4 decades, actually. You know, he got elected to the Senate in 1982. Of the people who are currently in the Senate, he is the longest serving member. He did serve in the House for a couple of terms in the 1970s. Excuse me. He was the longtime chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee and guided Vermont's overall highway, rail, and air systems for decades. He was always committed to a very strong transportation infrastructure. You know, one highlight that he had, he almost always opposed raising the gas tax in Vermont. But every once in a while, there would be a bill passed in Congress that would make matching money available. And he would say, okay, there is so much federal money available if we need to match it. And under those circumstances, he occasionally supported raising the gas tax. You know, Michaela, he was also a member, the third member of the Senate's Committee on Committees. Now, that's a pretty obscure committee that folks don't know about. But that panel makes all the committee assignments at the beginning of the session.
Right.
And it appoints all the committees that work out conference committees at the end of a session. So he was a very effective behind-the-scenes power broker in the Senate. He had a lot of influence in shaping the debate over issues. And yet, you know, he rarely made the headlines. That was not his style. He really preferred the quiet but effective approach. You know, but at the same time, he was always accessible to members of the press. He's always available for an interview. And it shows a changing of the guard, I think, in the Vermont Senate. In 2022, 10 new members were elected. There's some members who have been there for a number of years who are thinking about not running for re-election. So we're seeing the makeup of the Senate really kind of change. And Senator Mazza is an example of that.
I remember when we spoke to Senator Mazza on the show, I believe it was last year at the start of the legislative session, he wore a purple tie to signify the role he wanted to play in the State House. He also told, Peter Welch told VT Digger yesterday that he thinks Dick Mazza is the most impactful member of the General Assembly of the last 40 years. Well, Bob Kinzel, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for chatting with us today.
My pleasure.